Welcome to Crescent City Crime, dear listeners. I'm Tracy.
And I'm Brian.
And thank you to everybody who has joined us. And if you are new, welcome.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to October.
And we will make sure that you never leave. But in the nicest way.
But of course.
Anyway, all of our social media handles and links will be in the show notes. And we hope that you will help support this podcast by subscribing to Crescent City Crime on your preferred podcasting platform. And we also ask that you tell your friends about us and don't forget to tell your enemies.
Especially tell your enemies.
Well, speaking of social media, have you been in touch with David Ford lately?
Yeah. He's been running around town, you know, checking things out, doing little reports.
I heard he's on a quest for a chicken sandwich.
Yes. Of course, one of those southern fried chicken sandwiches.
Yeah.
As he's such a fan of fried food, you know, being from London and all.
Is he from London?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Did he live inside? Where did he live in London? Did he like live inside of Big Ben?
He might have lived on the street, for all I know.
Mm. Well.
Yes. I mean, he told me he was like on the proverbial man on the street beat.
I see.
And he told me he spends a lot of time on the street. So I'm kind of thinking he might have actually been homeless.
Oh. Well, I really hope that some TikTok views will help him out.
Yeah, he really needs it. Definitely.
Yes, dear listeners, if you want to know what we're talking about, you can go visit our TikTok, which is at tbsmith68. And we hope that you will give us a follow and join us, enjoy the videos. However, we're still new to this TikTok thing.
Yeah. David Ford's been helping us out.
Yes.
Some TikTok reports.
God save David Ford.
Yes. God save David Ford.
All right. Well, are you ready to get into the episode proper?
Yes.
All right. Well, it's time to get all the humor out of our systems because this is going to be a dark episode. Much, in my opinion, darker than the episodes we usually do because, let's face it, true crime is just dark.
It is. But I'm sure this is just going to be darker than the last one.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it's up to everybody to individually gauge how dark something is. But for me, this story hits home only because it's one thing to sit here as a true crime aficionado and say, oh, the husband did it. Okay. But what if it was one of your best friends who did it? It's a whole other kind of sinister.
And then sit back and let the husband take the blame because the husband is, of course, the lead suspect.
Well, that's not what happened in today's case. But we begin our story on June the 5th of 2012. A New Orleans man reported his girlfriend missing when she had failed to return home after work. And less than a week later, the parts of a dismembered body started washing up on the banks of the Mississippi Gulf Coast from Bay St. Louis to Long Beach in Hancock County, Mississippi. After the remains had been processed, Glenn Grannon, the chief investigator, was able to positively identify the remains as those of the missing woman. She was a young mother named Jaren Lockhart. She was 22 years old and left behind a 3-year-old daughter. Jaron Lockhart grew up in Tangipahoa Parish and came from a broken home, and as a teenager lived with other families. Her longtime friend Christina Murphy said that she had a rough life and had to grow up fast. She was a regular 14-year-old girl trying to get somebody to take care of her. And Christina Murphy looked at Jaron like a little sister. In 2009, Jaron made her way to New Orleans and started working as a dancer at a club called Stilettos, which is located on that Mecca of Sin, Bourbon Street. Jaron's stage name was Riot, and she was supporting her family by dancing. And unfortunately, she was also struggling with an addiction to heroin. Christina Murphy said that the last time she saw Jaron was in January of 2012, and she was using heroin at that time. At some point, Jaron Lockhart stopped dancing when her boyfriend got a well-paying job, but in 2011, her boyfriend lost that job, so she had to go back to work. And at the time of her death, Jaron and her boyfriend were living in a motel off Tulane Avenue, and Jaron's daughter was living with a grandmother. So a lot going on there.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know, kind of sad having to go back to a job like that. It probably wasn't a job that she liked very much. It's one of those deals to where you get hooked on the relatively easy money.
But it is also work.
Yeah, it is legitimate work, yes. And it's not unusual for someone in that line of work to do cocaine or heroin.
Or have a substance abuse issue.
Yeah, and the line that you'll hear in the corridor if you talk to enough bartenders and dancers is that the really skinny dancers are cokeheads.
Hmm. Well,
they eat less than but they do a lot of coke.
Well, I don't exactly know how true that is, but
remember, I did work in the quarter for a period of time.
Yes, and so did I. But because I have talked to some dancers who are out there, and you know, I mean, substance abuse it's a huge issue in the service industry in general. But it's also an issue in sex work too.
Yes.
It seems like it's the more, I don't know, sort of like a hidden problem that people tend to care less when it's about sex workers.
Because there are many people who see sex workers as, quote, throwaway people.
Right. But they're still human beings like everybody else, and everybody needs to keep remembering that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, sex workers do not deserve to be abused or neglected.
Exactly.
It's not like they're going out there victimizing people.
No, they're actually working, and I mean, honestly, it's pretty good money if you stick with it, and it, you know, it depends, of course, also on what type of work you're doing. But dancers on Bourbon Street do make pretty good money.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. And if you give, you know, if you pick them up on Uber or Lyft, they do tip.
Because they know what it's like.
Typically, yes, they typically tip.
Because they know what it's like.
That's right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. They are service industry people.
That's true. They are. Now, investigators spoke with Jaron's co-workers who saw her leave, and one of the dancers knew that Jaron had plans to have a private party with people, but she did not know who Jaron had left with. While Jaron Lockhart's friends and co-workers acknowledged that being a sex worker is risky, they insisted that she never left with strangers or exchanged sex for cash. And they also knew that she did not leave with strangers. Christy Lips, who also worked with Jaron, helped investigators with their case. She said that Jaron would have never left with random people. She had a daughter. She had a family. She would never have put herself in immediate danger. The news of Jaron's shocking death spread quickly through the community. Her friends and family were left to grieve and could only wonder who would do that to someone who was known as kind and good-hearted and seemed to have no enemies. Hancock County investigators immediately started to gather evidence, as did the New Orleans Police Department. Experts from the University of Southern Mississippi used divers and sonar to read the patterns of the waves to try to recover anything that linked back to Jaron Lockhart. Pretty hardcore investigation.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Did you have anything else to add about that investigation?
Well, police will take the disappearance of anyone who works at a Bourbon Street club seriously.
Yeah.
Because they're, you know, a French Quarter employee. You know, it's legal employment.
Right.
And from times I did work the French Quarter as a reserve police officer, I came to learn that occasionally a cop who works in the quarter, we're talking about the 1990s, might actually give one of these ladies a ride home.
Okay.
Sometimes just to be nice, sometimes because the cop was taking a particular interest.
I see.
And I did know it was this short brunette who did wind up dating this full-time NOPD 8th District officer I used to know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Along with surveillance camera footage and license plate recognition cameras, surveillance camera footage and license plate recognition cameras played a major role in helping investigators put the puzzle together. The cameras that were near the club where Jaron was last seen was used, and as well as other footage from throughout the French Quarter. And cameras that were located in Bay St. Louis to Long Beach were also viewed. While investigators were dragging the Gulf and reviewing footage, a man and a woman were driving through Tangipahoa Parish. The driver didn't use her turn signal and the car was pulled over. When the officer ran their names, it was discovered that the man, Terry Speaks, had 3 warrants in other jurisdictions. He was booked on charges of resisting an officer by fight and aggravated assault. His girlfriend, Margaret Sanchez, was arrested for being a fugitive from another parish. Police found out that Terry Speaks had used many aliases across the country and that he has a history of sex crimes. One charge involved a juvenile, and he served time for that charge in North Carolina. His arrest history goes back to the mid-1990s and includes convictions for larceny, possession of stolen property, and misdemeanor assault. In 2009, he jumped parole in North Carolina. And we are going to stop here to take a quick break. And when we come back, we will discover how Terry Speaks and Jaron Lockhart tie in together. And we are back. Brian, would it surprise you if I told you that Terry Speaks and Margaret Sanchez had a history of Jaron Lockhart?
No, that wouldn't surprise me.
Well, as it turns out, Jaron had met Margaret and Terry shortly after she moved to New Orleans, and Margaret was also a dancer at Stiletto's, the club that Jaron had worked at. And Terry worked security. When Margaret wasn't working, she hung out at the club to be near Terry. So she was hanging around the club during her off hours.
So Terry was a door guy?
Yeah, I guess so. Kind of like a bouncer.
Yeah. Well, think about the guys working the door or bouncers at clubs is that they're not state certified security guards.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Unless they are.
Right.
Okay, in which case it's going to be someone in a uniform, a I guess a while ago I talked about how I worked the door of Club Unfathomable in Gretna as a security guard, but I was actually supplementing the person working the door.
Right.
You see, the person working the door was not a state certified security guard.
And you were?
Yes.
Okay.
At the time.
Right.
So it's absolutely possible that someone working the door at a club has a record. A criminal history.
Okay.
And it can even be typical.
So in other words, a state certified security guard would not have any felonies on their record.
That's correct.
Okay. So that's the difference here.
Yes. Okay. Even an unarmed security guard in Louisiana cannot have a criminal record.
Well,
a felony conviction.
Thank you for that insight. I did not know that. But it makes sense. So Margaret was hanging around the club during her off hours to be around Terry. Which, do you want to be around your workplace when you're off?
Typically, no.
No.
Okay. Now, do you remember at one point I worked overnight at a Toys R Us?
Yes, you did.
And to me, that would be an exception to that rule.
Right. That's true.
Especially if you love toy stores.
Yes. RIP Toys R Us.
Yes. We knew you well.
We really did. We loved you too.
Too well.
Okay. Anyway. So, Terry was Margaret's boyfriend. Terry also worked as a barker, and, you know, that part of the job was to try to attract customers. You know, you stand outside the door.
It's typical in Bourbon Street for the person working the door to be doing that when not checking IDs.
Right.
Of people entering the club to try to, you know, get people to come in. That's typical.
And Jaren was often, I guess because she was so good looking, she was a beautiful woman. She was often asked by the club managers to go outside and stand next to Terry to help attract more people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's just the same as I'm willing to bet she was asked to entice guys to buy her a drink.
Right.
Which, if it's a drink for her, the bartender's not going to make it very strong.
Right.
So that she doesn't get wasted getting guys to spend money at the bar.
Right. Okay. Yeah. It's a whole system because, you know, let's face it, those clubs are expensive to operate. And they need all the money that they can get.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Alcohol sales are highly profitable.
That they are. That they are. And they got to make their rent.
I used to know someone who had I believe you knew him too, a teen club.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And his brother, when his brother entered the picture, this teen club, he was getting teenage girls to get guys to buy them soft drinks.
With no alcohol in them.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. You know, you can't serve alcohol at a teen club. And it just seems so comical.
I mean, it wasn't the worst idea.
No, not illegal, no.
No. Want to buy me a Pepsi when we're done recording, Brian?
Sure.
Yay. All right, so Jaren's co-workers identified Terry Speaks and Margaret Sanchez in the French Quarter footage as the people who left with Jaren on that fatal night. It is believed that Jaren left with them to have a private party at the home that Margaret and Terry shared in Kenner, Louisiana, which is about a 25-minute drive from the French Quarter. So that's the suburbs. Once again, going back to the suburbs, right?
Yeah, you can do it in 25 minutes.
Especially at nighttime.
Once you get on the interstate, although it depends on what part of Canada you're going to. Like, if you're going all the way to Vintage Drive, which is close to the lake,
mm-hmm.
and as well as close to, say, St. Rose,
Right.
Okay. It could take 30 minutes from there.
Well, a license plate recognition system camera in Kenner recorded Sanchez's car entering the city just 23 minutes after Jaron left the club. So they made it under 25 minutes that night.
Oh, yeah, they were speeding.
Well, okay. Now, this prompted the Kenner Police Department to search Terry and Margaret's home. That same week, Jaron's friends and family held a vigil in New Orleans, and her funeral was held less than a week later in Hammond, Louisiana. Jaron was very popular, and the services were well attended. Her brother, mother, and other relatives were amongst the attendees. Her brother Lance said that we don't have a very big family, and to see all these people out here means the world to us. The cops are doing the best they can. God doesn't sleep, and there will be justice. Jaron's longtime friend Christina Murphy arranged and paid for the funeral. Now, that's a really good friend.
Yes. Yes, definitely. It's very generous. It's one of those things that a friend does out of a sense of obligation.
Yeah. Yes. Now, the week before Jaron died, she and Christina spoke on the phone. She and her father were offering to pay for drug rehab for Jaron, which is also very generous. Christina later said that instead of rehab, I wound up paying for her funeral. So
sad. Which is really sad, because obviously that's not what she wanted to do with the money. And no, obviously she felt it was the least she could do.
Yeah.
Considering it was the same money.
Now, over the next month, Margaret Sanchez was released on a $1,500 bond, and Terry Speaks was held at the St. Tammany Parish Prison in the custody of the U.S. Marshals Service for failing to register as a sex offender. So what do you think of that? I mean, think of this. Then this was all based off them of a failure to signal. They were pulled over based off of failure to turn signal,
which is actually quite typical of people who just disregard a variety of laws in general.
Mm-hmm.
It goes with a pattern of behavior.
Okay, right.
The more you think about it, the more sense it makes. Someone who commits felonies, someone who commits misdemeanors, is going to think nothing of traffic laws. So traffic violations are actually great probable cause to pull someone over.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I never really thought of it quite that way, but I think that there's some kernels of truth in there.
Oh yeah, that's the easiest way to catch someone who is driving without insurance, for example. Is in the state of Louisiana, drivers are required to have, at a minimum, a liability insurance.
Right. So, soon after Margaret's release, she was charged with harboring a sex offender. But ultimately, the Tangipahoa District Attorney refused to bring charges of harboring a sex offender against Margaret Sanchez. She moved to Las Vegas, Nevada, and Terry Speaks was extradited to North Carolina, where he pled guilty for failing to register as a sex offender in federal court. And in the meantime, the Hancock County authorities in Mississippi continued to investigate Jaron's murder, and local businesses were reviewing their own surveillance footage in an attempt to identify Margaret's car in the area. So Margaret's in Nevada, Terry Speaks is in prison in North Carolina, and the investigation into Jaron's disappearance and death is still continuing.
The Hancock County, by the way, is the part of Mississippi you enter when you leave Slidell, Louisiana, on the North Shore.
That's right. That's how you would get to Biloxi.
And there are lots of people who live in Hancock County but work in New Orleans or even the North Shore.
Very true. Yes.
One of my filmmaking friends lives in one of our filmmaking friends lives in Hancock County.
Oh yeah, that's right. Hey, maybe he's Sean. Listening to this podcast. Hey, Sean, if you're listening, hello.
Hello, Sean.
So, because Jaren was murdered in Louisiana, but her body was taken across state lines, the FBI steps in. So this is now a federal investigation.
Of course. Crossing state lines makes it federal.
They impounded Margaret's car and started to process all the evidence that had turned up in the investigation. Less than 1 year after Jaren's murder, the Hancock County Sheriff's Office made a presentation to the District Attorney's Office to make a case against Terry Speaks and Margaret Sanchez. Knowing that they had to play their cards exactly right, the Sheriff's Office wasn't certain that they could book the suspects on murder charges, so they were going to charge them with desecration of a human corpse.
If I had to venture a guess, I think they were doing drugs and she OD'd and they decided to, you know, OD'd and died and decided to cover it up.
That's your theory?
Yeah, cover it up by disposing of her body.
Okay, well, we will get there. Glenn Grannon said that our strongest position is an alternative charge other than homicide. If we charge them with homicide and I'm not successful with a conviction, then double jeopardy comes into play and I'll never get another chance. That is a smart district attorney.
Yes, a smart DA actually goes for what they can get a conviction on.
Right.
Okay.
It reminds me, whenever I read about things like this, I'm always reminded of how the district attorney that charged Casey Anthony charged her for first-degree murder, but he was never able to prove intent, which was the big thing. You have to prove intent, right?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
That has to be, for first-degree murder, that pretty much has to be the plan.
Right.
That you plan to kill this person, literally.
Right. When it, in all likelihood, it was probably an accident. I don't think that she intended to kill her daughter. But the whole thing that became very tragic about it was when she wasn't really focused on looking for her daughter afterwards or even appearing to care.
Yeah, the bottom line is for first-degree murder conviction, the burden of proof is at its heaviest.
Right. Right. Anyway, that was a derail, but we're going to get back on track now. Margaret Sanchez and Terry Speaks were never charged in Hancock County because in April of 2014, less than 2 years after Jaren's brutal murder, authorities in Kent were able to arrest Margaret Sanchez and Terry Speaks for the murder of Jaren Lockhart.
Now, Kenner police don't play.
No, they don't. No, if you are unfamiliar with New Orleans, then you should know that Kenner is a suburb of New Orleans and they do not play. They will get you. And also, murders don't happen very often in the suburbs, so they have more time on their hands and they have better resources as well.
Yes, and the Kenner Police Department in particular loves to hire Marine Corps veterans.
Mm.
Let me count. Staff Sergeant Marrero, Corporal Cusimano, Corporal Schwest, Corporal Sandino. Let's see. There's a couple more, but that's just four off the top of my head.
That you served with, right? And they went to the Kenner Police Department after?
Yeah, I served with those Marines in particular.
Okay.
Yeah, and they, all four of them were the Kenner Police. Schwest is still with the Kenner Police. I see him every now and then.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Kenner police, I believe, the state, he's a lieutenant.
Well, next time you see him, you should tell him about the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
And we will get into what happens at the trial and everything that came after this charge when we return from this break. And we're back. So, due to evidence such as the surveillance footage from the French Quarter and the fact that a license plate camera recorded Margaret's car entering Mississippi just 22 hours after Jaron left the club, and then the car was picked up re-entering Louisiana about 1.5 hours later, information from jailhouse informants and the work of the detectives, as well as a diligent private investigator, authorities in Kenner were able to charge Terry Speaks and Margaret Sanchez in the premeditated murder of Jaron Lockhart.
Ah, that's interesting.
Yes, premeditated murder. So, during the trial of Terry Speaks, a Jefferson Parish jury heard testimony from Christian Del Rosario and Trevor Lucas. Those two men were housed with Terry Speaks in a federal prison in New York State. Speaks had discussed the details of his role in Jaron's murder with them.
Now, another theory I have is that it could have been with a robbery motive.
Okay. All right. Okay, so you've changed your theory, yes?
No, it's either they did drugs with her and she OD'd, I think, or they realized she had a large sum of money at one point in time.
Being
such creatures of habits and requiring cash for these habits.
Right.
They decided to go ahead and rob and murder her to cover up the robbery.
Well, Terry Speaks told his cellmates that he and Margaret Sanchez knocked Jaron out with a blow to her head when she got into the car with them.
Wow.
So, as soon as she got into the car with them, they knocked her out. They bound her and put her in the trunk of Margaret's car. So when they went into Kenner, and even though the license plates were recorded on those cameras, Jaron was not in that footage.
Because she was in the trunk.
Because she was in the trunk. And then
they must have both lifted the body to get the body to get her in the trunk. Well, assuming she was already dead.
Right.
It must have taken both of them to get her body into the trunk.
And out of the trunk, too, because they moved her body into the bathroom of the house. And Del Rosario said that Margaret went crazy, went to the backyard, grabbed a scythe, and started stabbing the girl time and time again, and they decapitated the body and cut it up.
Oh, wow. He's a Grim Reaper, too.
Yes, the Grim Reaper tool, that's right. He also told the court that Speaks had explained to him that he wasn't worried about the French Quarter footage because it didn't catch him getting into the car. He also said that Speaks told him that after they disposed of the body, they used bleach and other cleaning agents on the car to remove evidence. They even used drain cleaner in the bathroom drains to make sure that no traces of Jaron's blood would be found in there. So not only was this premeditated, they really tried very hard to dispose of evidence.
And they probably didn't catch everything.
Probably not. And in Trevor Lucas's testimony, he said that Terry was concerned about a neighbor named Jason who was in the driveway next to his car and on his stoop and then on his balcony. He was concerned that if Jason had seen him at the wrong time, it would have messed up his alibi.
Of course.
Yes, of course. Even though Terry Speaks said that he would refuse to testify against Margaret Sanchez, he didn't have to. While Terry sat in jail and Margaret was enjoying her freedom in Las Vegas, the pair communicated through a series of phone conversations that were recorded, and for some reason there were also emails.
Oh.
Yes, emails.
Yes, yes, it seems, whether it's emails or it's social media. Yeah, you know, we criminals can be quite social.
Yes, they can be.
And they tend to rat themselves out via social media and emails.
The testimonies of the jailhouse informants match the information in those communications as well. Terry was angry that he was in jail while Margaret was free. In one conversation, Speaks tried to tell Sanchez what to say. And in another conversation, Speaks talked about the spring cleaning that he did on Sanchez's behalf while she was at work. So she didn't even really help the cleanup job, it seems like.
Ah, yes. Well, at some point, when things unravel, accomplices turn on each other.
That does happen often. Terry also said during the same conversation that he still had Jaron's underwear and he threatened to turn them over to the authorities. So he kept a piece of evidence. And they used code when referencing the murder as the time that their dog had parvo.
Oh, yes. Detectives will never figure that out.
No.
You know, never.
Margaret Sanchez and Terry Speaks were tried separately in Jefferson Parish, Louisiana. Before Sanchez could stand trial, she pled guilty to manslaughter and obstruction of justice. Judge Stephen Greffer of the 24th Judicial District Court sentenced Sanchez to 40 years in prison, and she is currently serving her sentence. The trial of Terry Speaks took place in June of 2015. Terry Speaks represented himself.
Oh. I mean, that's something you should only do in municipal court.
Or even traffic
court. Or traffic court.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. The judge even tried to advise him against us. Like any judge should, really.
Right. Any prudent judge would advise you to have an attorney if you're being charged with a felony, but even possibly a state misdemeanor charge, like a state misdemeanor domestic violence charge, you're going to want an attorney for that.
Right. He also warned Speaks that he would not be given any special treatment, even though he only had a high school education. Or rather, Terry Speaks only had a high school education, but the judge said that he would not receive any special treatment, regardless of his education level, which is fair.
Right, exactly. Right. It's supposed to be a fair trial.
Right.
And that means it has to be a fair trial for the prosecution as well.
It does. When the assistant district attorney on the case, Doug Freese, gave his opening statement, he talked to the jury for over an hour. It's a long opening statement.
Yeah, that's enough time for a manifesto. Pretty much was like when Hitler got a light sentence during his trial for the failed, I believe it was 1923 putsch.
Right.
He gave a speech that was at least an hour long and actually swayed judges.
Wow.
And got a lenient sentence.
So are you saying that Hitler represented himself successfully in court?
Actually, I don't think he didn't represent himself. But he at one point he stood and gave a speech.
You know, he should, you know, forget being an artist. He should have been an attorney. He probably would have made a great attorney. Do you agree?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's anyone who can just simply just captivate a judge.
Right.
In the way he did, would be a successful trial attorney.
Yeah. Too bad he went down the path that he did. He could have really done some great things in court.
Yeah, well, tragic as it may seem, criminal geniuses typically fail at something. In his case, he failed at being an artist.
Right.
And then wind up, you know, showing the world what they could do. Showing society what they could do.
Hmm.
You know, like also think Charles Manson.
Right.
Of course.
Right, you know. Yeah. Yeah, because he was, he kept trying to get his music recorded and the producer kept giving him feedback and he would get angry about it. So he decided to go do something else. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
you're right.
Like other criminal geniuses. He wanted the help of a few yes men.
Right.
He didn't want constructive criticism. He just wanted people to say yes.
Well, so we're going to, again, another derail, but that's okay. We're going to get back on track again. Doug Freese went into detail about what happened to Jaron and said that Speaks and Sanchez demonstrated their absolute lack of respect for the law, for life, and for basic human dignity. He then went on to say that Jaron Lockhart's body was dismembered in a way to hide her tattoos. So they were really trying to not have her identified at all.
Yeah, and it's funny, we kind of touched on the Nazis. They Nazis would remove the skin that had tattoos. Concentration camps, but let's not go there.
Yeah,
but that kind of triggered that knowledge there.
I mean, you are right, but we're gonna save the Holocaust discussion for a different episode. Anyway, the district attorney said that you will conclude that her body was treated as if it were trash and dropping it in the Gulf was a mission to have her be a missing person. And the opening statement of Terry Speaks was filled with objections from the prosecution and lasted less than 15 minutes. Speaks said that after that opening argument, I'm ready to convict myself. They have not found any evidence, but Douglas Freese wants you to think that we're calculated individuals.
Yeah, they are. Yes.
Yeah, they are.
That's kind of an admission of guilt.
Yes, it is exactly that. Speaks went on to claim that there was no evidence found because the crime didn't even happen. And he also said that he and Sanchez did not do it.
Oh, of course they didn't. Oh, yes. The crime didn't happen. She dismembered herself and jumped in the lake, right?
That's, yes. Well, actually, yes, that is what happened. You're correct. You're so right, Brian.
Yes, just the same as, you know, that's not my crack. The crack fairy brought it.
Well, you would make a great attorney.
Thank you.
Dr. Dana Troxclair, who is a forensic pathologist, testified that while opiates were in Lockhart's system, that was not the cause of death. Her conclusion is that Lockhart died of a stab wound. She said that a knife was thrust into Jaron's body with such force that the blade of the murder weapon was buried about 4.5 inches into her torso after it punched through her sternum and pierced her heart. So stabbed right in the heart.
This takes quite a bit of force because you have to penetrate the sternum. And like, for example, police body armor, the original reason for the trauma plate that covers the sternum is to protect the heart from a knife, you know, a stab wound.
Right.
Because through regular Kevlar, because Kevlar is a textile, it can be cut with a knife or even stabbed through with a knife. Because
right.
it's constructed to scatter the blunt trauma energy that surrounds a bullet, you see.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, the trauma plate is a piece of, started off as a piece of steel inserted in, you know, a pocket of the body armor that covers the sternum to protect against a stab, you know.
Okay.
But it was found out in vehicular accidents, it actually protects a police officer from the steering wheel.
Oh, like if they hit something and your chest goes into the steering wheel?
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As, you know, Second Chance Body Armor Company keeps records of police saves, lives that are saved. And many of those are in vehicular accidents.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And they replace the body armor after it saves a police officer's life free of charge.
Oh, is it? Does the body armor get damaged enough to where it needs to be replaced every time?
No, it's recommended.
So, because like it weak or it's weakened, right? I guess.
Like yes.
The material's weakened. Okay. Okay. Huh. Now, in the end, Terry Speaks was sentenced to life in prison, and he is currently serving his sentence. People who knew Jaron Lockhart and Margaret Sanchez said that jealousy might have been a motivating factor in the murder. They commented that Lockhart and Sanchez were at the opposite ends of the personality spectrum and described Sanchez as socially odd. Christina Murphy described Sanchez as outlandish and said that Lockhart was pretty and she was somebody that she wanted to be around. Everybody loved Jaron and she was this small bundle of happy energy. She also said that Margaret was just a jealous person. She was dark and she sought attention. And Jaron just naturally had received attention. Jaron's mother, Donna, said that Margaret went down the wrong road in life and she... Jaron's mother, Donna, said about Jaron that she went down the wrong road in life and she did some bad things, but she was a good person and she trusted everybody. And that's the story of how a friendship went the worst way possible.
Yeah, those obviously aren't the kinds of people you want as friends. Those are the kinds of people who seek to exploit their friends. As well as like criminals, like career criminals, criminals who really live the life and they have rap sheets, will oftentimes see certain friends who are nice to them as a weakness.
Well, I kind of wonder
that
if
that can be exploited.
If the, I mean, it's no matter how much, because there was a lot of information on this case. I remember reading about this in the newspapers when it was going on, but what I've never been able to find out is, and I'm going to theorize this, Brian, do you think that Margaret just wanted Jaron dead but didn't have the guts to do it herself, so got her boyfriend to do it instead?
That is quite possible.
Yes.
So, you know, robbery plus jealousy.
Yes. Yep. That those are common motivators in homicides.
Yeah. It's, you know, tragic when someone trusts the wrong people.
Yeah. And it happens a lot.
Which is why no one, if you know someone who has substance abuse issues and seems to be financially needy, those are not good friends to have.
In general, you're correct. They really should be kept at arm's length.
Yeah, they will try to steal from you.
Don't let them in your house.
Right. Yeah, don't want them in your house. They'll try to steal from you. And given the opportunity,
Kill you.
might even rob and murder you.
They might.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have something they want. And in this case, she had two things that her so-called friend wanted. One was popularity, the other,
Money.
a quick hit.
Yeah.
Money.
Yeah. Yes. So, Brian, do you have anything else to say before we wrap up?
Yes. The attorney who represents himself on Halloween has a ghoul for a client.
God, everybody just heard me snort laugh, but I'm gonna leave that in because I don't care. Because I'm human and humans snort laugh. Well, in next week's episode, we're going to discuss a series of axe murders that were tied to a voodoo priestess way back in the early 1900s.
Ooh, that's spooky.
You know what? It actually is going to be a spooky story. And everybody, until next time, remember to be safe, be kind, and that glass is not Halloween candy.
No, it isn't. If it's dark, it's dangerous, and you don't feel safe. Don't be there in the
Oh boy.
first place.
That is the pits ending to a really good podcast.